Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Comedy Concepts with your host, Nancy Lombardo.
Yes, it's Monday today. We've got a very special guest for you. The amazing Fran McCaffrey. Yes, Fran is an incredible woman. She's a comedian, 14-time author, spokesperson, motivational speaker, and host of Live It Up Now, adventurer, and 5-time world record holder, most known as Guinness Book World Records, fastest-talking female. She's been on over 350 television shows, including Morning, Morning America, Fox and Friends, Martha Stewart Show, Larry King Live, Discovery Channel, Nick at Night. She's also been heard on over 3,500 radio shows. Now we make that 501. Okay, we have our guest today, Fran Capo. We're going to bring her up on the line in a second. But first, let me see if you can guess what today's theme is going to be. Here it comes. Hold on. All right, it's not doing it for me. Darn it. All right, I'm going to bring Fran on now. I had this great music set up for you, Fran Capo.
I heard, but you know what? Maybe the eerie effect of something is in the air.
I think it is. We'll see if it'll want to do it for me, but darn.
I know. Isn't it frustrating? You plan.
Yeah, the best laid plans of mice and men. It's so true.
I know.
I did this so like I had it all going. It was working all before. Okay. I'm not going to risk
losing
you.
And then the second you get off the air, you're going to go, oh, that's what I did again.
It's making me crazy. It was so perfectly set up. I don't know what went wrong with it. But, Fran, anyway, glad to have you.
Thank you.
And,
glad to be back.
Oh, here we go. I got it now. It's coming.
Okay.
Here we go. All right, Fran, you've got a new book out. And this
yes.
is the theme. Here it comes. Fran Capo's newest, latest book. And the title is, Fran, tell them.
Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey.
Here we go. Let's start it with a little theme music. I like this, Fran, because it's your theme music now.
I know. Look at this. Each book's going to have different theme music.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely. It's who are you going to buy?
Yeah,
Fran Capo.
Very cute.
I love it. And today, Fran's going to be talking about all the mysteries and myths of New Jersey and our latest book in a series of thrilling books about our states and the tri-state area. Oh, I love it, Fran. I love it.
Well, you
all
know,
right.
Just
that was
keep...
just
now
thing.
You feel better. Now you feel better because we got
now
the music.
I feel better.
That's it.
There
we
you
started
go.
The show the way that you wanted.
Because we have the mysteries and the Ghostbusters and the Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey by Fran Capo. True stories
too.
Of the unsolved and unexplained. Fran, this is great. Tell us about your new book.
Well, you know, Nancy, I've written a bunch of books, and I got to tell you,
yes,
this Myths and Mysteries.
Is this your 14th?
This is my 14th book.
Oh, good.
And this book was so much fun to write because the difference with this is I was required by the editor that I actually had to go out and get pictures. Now, when you're trying to get pictures of a myth and a mystery, it's not so easy. Like, I'm writing about the Jersey Devil, and I'm like, and where exactly am I going to get a picture of the Jersey Devil, you know? I mean, it's like for centuries, people have been trying to capture the Jersey Devil on film. I'm thinking, is he going to be like hitchhiking on the side of the road, you know, with his thumb out and his skirt up? I mean, where am I going to find this thing, you know? So, but I'm telling you, well, first, the whole thing of the Myths and Mysteries
Tell us how this came about, that you decided to write this book, because you do have a series of books. And if anyone's on my website,
series,
you can see the series of It Happened in New York, It Happened in New Jersey, It Happened in Pennsylvania.
Yep, and that's all with Glo Pequot Press. And Glo Pequot said to me, listen, we have this new series that we're doing, and we think you would be perfect for it. Would you be interested? And I was like, well, what is it about? And they said, it's all the the myths and mysteries of different states. Things from unsolved, you know, cold cases to ghosts, to, you know, sea monsters, to, you know, people that are considered the boogeymen in their town, to haunted castles. So it's like, yeah, actually, that seems something right up my alley. I mean, considering I'm in the, you know, the Guinness book and the Ripley's book, and the Ripley's, you know, I mean, are all believe
That's right,
it or not.
Because Fran, when you Google www.francapo.com, you'll see she's a very brave woman to go after this, but that's not just the first time she's done it. She's jumped out of planes. She's climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. She's scaled bridges. She's dove to the Titanic. So this is nothing. This is above ground for you.
Exactly, above ground. But I got to tell you, it was just, you know, normally I travel, you know, to different ends of the world, different continents, and I do these adventures, you know, from ice climbing in Antarctica, you know, to being chased by a leopard seal, you know, the and then the Kilimanjaro, obviously, in Tanzania. And so when I was doing this book, so they told me, they said, you know, it could be 12 to 15 different mysteries, and, you know, just go out there and get a picture. But the way that my mind works, I'm like, well, if I'm going to go out there and get a picture, I want to, you know, like, dig deep. I want to speak to the people who claim they've seen these things. I want to, you know, go there when supposedly the ghosts are out. I want to find out, you know, like, well, what is the basis of this story? Because it's all fine and good to do research, you know, from your desk. But it's another thing to actually go to the site. Now, obviously, a lot of these things, you know, started happening centuries back, and the stories have carried forward. So you want to see, like, you know, who's seen this thing? Are there, you know, so, for example, the Jersey Devil is a common, that's the only one I could say that is a common myth in Jersey that I covered, because unlike the It Happened in series
tell
is
them
like
the year that took place, that tell them, give them a little backstory on the Jersey Devil, because it sounds like a baseball team if you just say it.
Right, exactly. So, well, the Jersey Devil, it started, the legend began in 1735, and supposedly on one, you know, dark, stormy night in 1735, on a lonely stretch of road, which was called Scott's Landing in Leeds Point, by Atlantic County, in the Pinelands in South Jersey. You know, the Pinelands is also known as the Pine Barrens, which is where so many things, you know, are supposed to have happened. Everything from mob people burying dead bodies to, you know, wolf packs attacking people.
It's kind of, isn't it known for that, like a good place to lose a body?
Yes, exactly, because it's so big, and, you know, and then if there is a Jersey Devil, maybe he eats it. Maybe he has a deal with the mob. Who knows? Maybe the mob goes, listen, I bring your dead body, you're happy, you get rid of the evidence for me, you know, we work out this thing. And the Jersey Devil gives him a high five, they pay him on the side, and, you know, they go off on their merry way. But with the Jersey Devil, the way he began was, there is a mom, you know, you're a mom, I'm a mom, you know, she's bringing a kid into the world. Except this lady didn't know when to stop, because she already had 12 kids. So this child that was supposed to be born would have been her 13th child. So her name was Jane Leeds. They call her Mother Leeds. And so, you know, as the birth was getting nearer, you know, they didn't run to the nearest hospital. They had a midwife. And several of the neighbors, you know, they're sitting around waiting for the child to be born. And they're all, you know, it's, you remember, everything's by candlelight. So there's the flickering of the glow of the candlelight. And they're waiting for the kid to be born. And, you know, it was a thunderstorm night. You know, perfect setting for this is, you know, stormy, rainy night, the lights flickering, and she is just, she wants this kid out of her. You know, she's had enough with this birth and these babies, you know, she doesn't want it anymore. So she screams, you know, in agony, and she's yelling out loud, and she screams out loud, I don't want any more children. I wish this child be born a devil. So, of course, you know, if there would have been organ music back there, you would hear dun-dun-dun, you know? And so what happens is, you know, the women look at each other, and within a few minutes after the mother yells this out, a healthy baby boy, you know, pops out of her. So everybody's, like, relieved, like, oh, thank goodness her wishes didn't, you know, happen. So they wrap the baby up in the blanket, and then suddenly the story goes that the baby begins to change. The face starts to melt like molten wax and become distorted, and it's like this bone-cracking sound, and what once started to look like a little cute, adorable baby's nose turns into a horse's snout. Then the body began to stretch, and the shoulders, you know, sprung bat wings, and the body grew longer and larger and stretched into a shape of a, like a humped serpent, and then razor-sharp claws sprouted sprouted from the hands, and horses' hooves sprouted from the feet, and finally the forked tail completed like this demon child. So everyone's watching in horror and disbelief how, you know, this child is just transforming, and then it lets out supposedly this blood-curdling cry, and smoke comes out of its nostrils, and then all of a sudden it, you know, looks at the women, and, you know, they know they're in trouble, so it starts whipping its tail around the room. They're like, well, giving it a baby bottle at this moment is not going to be, you know, helping it out. And it starts, you know, then they all start cursing at the mother for cursing the child because they feel that's what brought the child to become like this.
Well, that's like and, too much away, Fran.
Okay, all right.
Let's just say that this myth, or mystery, now, how did you go about finding the facts on that?
Well, but here's, well, let me just add one thing. So yeah. It started out as this is how the legend starts out, right? But over the years, up until present day, there have been several thousand, not just a few people, 7,000 reported sightings between 1840, just between 1840 and 1999. Several thousand. So, you know, like 4,000 or 5,000 sightings. And we're talking
Where do these sightings occur?
They occur everywhere. People have said they've seen them
in
New Jersey, always near around the Pine Barrens. I mean, there's been a case where a whole fire department said that they saw the Jersey Devil on the roof of a house, jumping from house to house, an entire fire department. Napoleon Bonaparte's brother, who at one point in time lived in Jersey, was on the battlefield. He says that he saw the Jersey Devil. I mean, there are ministers, there are postmasters, there are generals of armies, there are policemen. I mean, all people, newspapermen.
That have cited this
Jersey Devil. I mean, and always with the, you know, a little variation on a theme because the thing's not standing there posing for a picture. They happen to capture it eating, you know, cattle, or they see it jumping from roof to roof, or, you know, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, so, you know, and obviously then the papers report it, and then, you know, and then other people on the lookout, there's, you know, always been awards offered, you know, $10,000 for the reward of its capture. And I'm not going to go on, but I mean, literally.
I don't want to give too much away. Let me just say that in the book, so Fran takes you from, in a story-type fashion, it's not just factual, it's a story-type fashion, and sets it up for you, as only Fran can do, of this hideous, horse-faced, winged, tail, clawed, hoofed beast.
That's right.
And I'd like to welcome another radio show right now that's in the chat room, Betty Jo Tucker. Hi, Betty Jo. She says hi to you, Fran.
Hey, Betty Jo, how are you?
Well, Betty Jo's got a great Blog Talk Radio show as well, and I'm one of her fans. And this book, so Fran, Betty Jo, because I want to let Betty Jo know about you. By the way, not only has Fran, we're going to get back and forth with this book because we have time, but Fran is also the Guinness Book World Record holder as the fastest talking woman in the world.
Now, should I speak slow? Yeah. The Guinness Book of World Records, 603.32 words a minute, which is 11 words a second, is what I was clocked at. And because of that fast-talking record, I actually, the one who used to hold the record was the Federal Express guy. And so that's, you know, a lot of people know him. So he's the one whose record I beat. And I've held the record since March 5th. 1986, rebroke the record at the Guinness Museum in Vegas in 1990, and so I get to do all these crazy things going around the world, actually speaking fast. A lot of times I'm sitting on a plane and I'm going, this is amazing, but what works out really cool is, you know, things like men, what do men complain about, Nancy, you know, oh my goodness, women bring up everything from every previous argument. I said, yes, but it'll be over in 2 minutes, so, you know, what are you worried about?
Actually, let's break away from the book. We're going to come back to two stories of the unsolved and unexplained myths of the series of New Jersey, because my chat room is lighting up, and I want to just give them a little of the backstory on you, Fran, and I think I have a clip here, just so you know all about, and welcome to the room, Superficial Rhubarbs in the room, hello, and let's get a taste of what Fran does besides these mystery books, which has just come out, right, Fran? This book is
That's
just
right, it literally just came out a few days ago.
A few days ago, pre-Halloween, but let's get a little taste of the inner Fran Capo that moves the myths and mysteries along. Here we go.
As an adventuress, Fran Capo walks her talk and challenges herself at every turn. She lives her fear nothing philosophy and brings her energy and enthusiasm into the corporate setting to motivate, educate, captivate.
Philosophy with him. Like, I remember one time my son had a book report due. And in the book report, the teacher wrote, right? She wrote, "What was the author thinking when he wrote this?" I said, "How the hell are we going to know what the author was thinking?" So I said, "Spencer, we're going to call up the author."
Fran Capo speaks from the heart, relating personal anecdotes and practical advice that demonstrates her philosophy.
So I look on the back of the book, right? And it says, I don't remember the author's name at this point, but it said so-and-so was a graduate and it had what college that he taught at, right? So I call the college. "Oh, he's no longer, you know, teaching here, blah, blah, blah." I said, "Listen, and then I was like, well, I don't believe in lying, but I believe that sometimes you're going to just, like, push it a little. So I said, "All right, well, let me just think." And so then I said, "Well, do you know where, like, else he's teaching or whatever?" And they say, "Oh, we can't divulge that information, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Eh, forget it. They're not going to help me." So I look in the back and I said, "He happily lives in Orange, New Jersey with his wife." "Eh, I am in New Jersey." Okay, so I call up the Yellow Pages. "Eh, it's so-and-so, blah, blah, blah." Yeah, I call. I go, "Hello, my name is Fran Capo. I know this is going to sound very strange, but your husband wrote a book, and my son has a book report due, and they want to know what he was thinking when he wrote it. And can my son interview you? Interview your husband?" She goes, "Yes." I said, "Look, I'm not a stalker or anything like that. I don't want you to worry about this, you know." I said, "You could look and caller ID, you know, check me back, you know, call me back, whatever you got to do, because, you know, people might get worried, you know. And so, you know, who knows? He may think, like, I'm from the past, some lover who's trying to find out if he's having a good marriage. You don't know, right?" So I'm like, "All right, fine." So I call up and I say to Spencer, "Okay, now we got to get these questions done and everything." So he gets all the questions. I said, "Do it very professional. Say, you know," I said, "we'll put a tape on and you'll do it, you know, like, 'Hello, this is Spencer Patterson reporting for MS-172 when I'm interviewing.' I said, "Do it like that, you know?" And I said, "And don't tell the teacher, because then the teacher's going to have her own, you know, now we'll call everybody, you know, I don't want the whole class calling the guy." So anyway, he does the interview, and embarrassingly enough, we forgot to turn the tape on. Right. So I'm like, "All right, we went this far. We got to call him back again." So I call him back and I go, "I'm sorry. I just want to tell you that was a very good first rehearsal. And I mean, my philosophy is live every day as if it's your last, and one day you'll be right. You know? I'm not saying bad stuff happens. Look, I've been held up at gunpoint twice. I've had my house burned down. I took care of my dad on hospice when he was dying of cancer. I've had a lot of things happen to me, okay? So it's not like people go, "Oh, you know, you got such a positive..." Yeah, I had stuff happen to me. But the thing is, remember in the Bible they said it came to pass? Just remember this. It came to pass. It didn't come to stay. When my dad was dying of cancer, I had him at home, and I was taking care of him on hospice. But my dad always had a good sense of humor. Like, what he would do is when he was having the chemo, he made me buy a chia pet to see his hair would grow back faster, right? Of course, he was always over there cutting the chia pet hair so that, you know. Enjoy what you're doing, and don't let anyone stop you. Every single one of you has something inside, a special gift. Discover what it is and let it shine. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that's what makes Fran so amazing, listeners. Thank you, Betty Jo. Fran, Betty Jo says you are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And Betty Jo, by the way, there's a tie-in with Betty Jo, because Betty Jo hosts Movie Addict Headquarters, and she's doing Frankenstein Revisited on her next show. So. There's a tie-in between you and Betty Jo. Oh, she loved your saying, enjoy what you're doing, your special gift. Great advice. Oh, well, that was nice. Thank you, Betty Jo.
Thank you.
Superficial Rhubarb is on in the chat room as well. Yes, and that's the amazing thing. This is your 14th book?
My 14th book, actually. My 14th book.
Were you glad
book,
to get that over?
That is now.
You're writing a book on myths and mysteries and having that 13th book hanging over you.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, it was funny because I'm like going, how odd is it that the 13th book becomes the Myths and Mysteries book? And actually, there's two more that are coming out because I have the 14th one I already handed in. That doesn't come out to November. And I have another November of 2011. And then I have another book coming out in a couple of months, which is totally opposite.
How many books will that make this year?
I'll have a total of I'll have a total of 15 because that one's coming out again. So in all, I'll have a total of 15 books.
15 books. Okay.
I wrote writing three this year. Three books this year.
And it's amazing. And just if you could briefly just give a rundown of all the books you've written.
Okay, there. It happened. Let's see. Okay, so there's the whole "It Happened" in series. So it's "It Happened" in New York, "Happened" in Pennsylvania, "Happened" in New Jersey, "Happened" in New York City, and then what happened? And then what happened from those is that because those books did well, second editions came out, which are different than the first edition. So there's "It Happened" in New York second edition, which has added chapters, different maps, different trivia. The "It Happened" in Pennsylvania book. So that's again another book, and then. And they happen in New Jersey, a book will be coming out also. Then I wrote comic crime novel, Almost a Wise Guy, a true story based on the life of my dad. Had one brother, a highly decorated police officer, the other one in the mob. Then I had Adrenaline Adventures, Dream It, Read It, Do It, 50 different adventures you could do in a day or weekend. How to Get Publicity Without a Publicist. How to Break
Wait a minute, back up. 50 adventures in one day?
Well, that would be pretty tiring. In a day or a weekend, yeah, exactly. 50 adventures. You know, you go straight from, you're like a James Bond. You jump out of the plane, you go dig for gold. No, 50 different adventures you could do in a day or a weekend. And everything from panning for gold to scuba diving with sharks to flying combat aircraft to driving race cars.
Which you did, by the way.
Thank you, Nancy. Yes, because a lot of times I would, sell the book and people go, "Oh, this is cool. Have you done these?" I'm like, "Look, my picture's on the cover. I did every single one of these. I can't tell people to go out and do them if I don't do them myself." So I did that. Then How to Get Publicity Without a Publicist, which is like
which
in
actually,
the beginning.
Any of my listeners, that's a very good book. She breaks it down for you how to generate more towards your site or more towards you getting more publicity.
Exactly. And the thing is, not everybody when they're starting out in business can afford a publicist, but yet if you have a great product and it just sits on a shelf, who knows about it? So, and spun out of How to Get Publicity Without a Publicist is my three CD pack called The Secrets of Publicity. And then I have How to Break into Voiceovers, because I've done voiceovers for a lot of different, cartoons and commercials. And as a matter of fact, my Gain radio detergent commercial is airing right now, which is cool because they use my name in it. So people go, "Is that you?" And they go, "Well, yeah, they say Frank Apple, so unless there's another one around." And then the other one is How to Break into Voiceovers, Humor and Business Speaking. Humor
comedy.
And
you wrote a book on comedy.
Right, Humor and Business Speaking and Everyday Life. So how to just add it into anything you're doing. Because, sometimes, people get upset. Like I say, things come to pass. They don't come to stay. But while they're happening, Nancy, you and I
don't
both know
also
this.
Have a Do you have a motivational CD?
Well, no, I don't. Oh, yes, I have one called The Science of Getting Rich,
yes,
which is motivational because, look, face it, money's not the answer to everything, but it sure makes things a heck of a lot easier. So, and The Science of Getting Rich, and then Hope Fill the City of Light, which is coming out in November, was out, but it's coming out all new revamped revision, because actually I self-published that one, but now a publisher picked it up, so that one's coming out.
I have a question for you. Betty Jo Tucker from Movie Attic Headquarters wants to know, how does Fran find the time to do so much?
Yeah. What is sleep? You know what it is? I learned a long time ago, and I guess it's because, my mother taught me that nothing is impossible, and my dad told me to always find the humor in life. So I always figured if I had something to look forward to, if you always said, that makes life enjoyable. So what happens is literally after a project ends, I'll take like a day and I'll go, wow, okay, let me just think about this for a second. I actually finished my, finished the book, blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like going, okay, now what's next? And then I just like leap into the next thing because like I'm excited about what else can I do that can help people, that can make things easier for people, that can change the world, that also becomes fun for me to work on, because then if it's fun for me, then they'll see my passion and it'll be fun for other people too.
Well, I've known Fran a long time, also Fran Kapp. She's also a stand-up comedian, very funny. But, Fran, you do have an approach to life to seizing opportunity. At one time, an opportunity arose for you to travel to the Antarctic. Would you?
Yeah. And it literally, the way this happens, and Nancy, you know me, it's like one minute I'm here, one minute I'm there. It's almost like, where am I? So I'm New Year's, 10 days after New Year's last year, I get an email out of the blue. Hi, Fran. Happy New Year's. Are you sitting down? How would you like, do you have 10 days free? How would you like to go to Antarctica? All expenses paid. I'm having a travel adventure seminar, and I would like you to be one of the speakers, and obviously, you know, get paid. And it was only 37 people on this boat to Antarctica. And so he said, just get yourself to Argentina. So we're at the tip of the world in a place called Ushuaia. So I'm like, I'm there. And of course, I run, Spencer, guess where I'm going. That's my son. Guess where I'm going? Antarctica. And he's like, of course you are. You're my mother. What are you doing now? I go, no, no. There's killer whales there and leopard seals. And, you know, so I start telling him, I get all excited. Now, I only have, a few days to get ready, whereas everybody else who was on the trip knew that they were going to be doing it for like a year. So people had trained, so I didn't realize all the stuff they were going to be doing. I have a lake in my backyard. I'm like, and they said, oh, we're going to be kayaking. Well, apparently it's a little different to kayak in Antarctica than in the calm lake in the back of my house. So, but I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, how difficult could it be to kayak? And then we're going to have ice climbing, and apparently people have been practicing this ice climbing. And I'll be quite honest with you. I was excited that I was going, but I didn't do all the I did some research and, you know, knew that it's not North Pole, so it's not the polar bears. It's more the killer whales, you know, and the penguins and stuff. But I didn't do full research because I was busy getting ready and trying to get the passport. I mean, I had the passport, but trying to get, you know, all the gear I needed and everything to be able to go and the talks that I were going to do. And so in my excitement to go, I did not look up that they had the most, now I'm blanking out on the name of it, but what's the sea that's up there? The Drake Passage. So I did not realize that the Drake Passage was the roughest seas in the world. But the guy who invited me, Nick Halleck, who's a friend of mine, he says to me, he goes, you know, Fran, you might want to bring, like, Dramamine or wear an ear patch. I'm like, nah, I don't get seasick. I scuba dive all the time, not realizing it's, you know, the roughest sea passage in the world. And he keeps going, are you sure? And I'm like, hey, I'll be fine. Well, we get on this, you know, ice-breaking boat, and we're going out there. And when we're doing this, you know, I mean, the way they had to tie, literally, they had to tie things down. We couldn't even eat the food regularly because what they had to do was they had to have pots that literally screw into the stove so that the thing doesn't, you know, all the pots in the kitchen don't go all over the place. So when I'm in the shower, I'm laying down and I'm small and, you know, 5'2", and we're in double bunk beds because it's it's like a research ship. It's not a luxury ship. You're going into, you know, Antarctica. So I'm laying down. The beds are not that big, and it's a Russian crew, you know, and we're there. So you're in the quarters that the crew normally sleeps in. I mean, that's what it's like. So I'm in this bed, and the boat is rocking so much, and because I'm little, what's happening is the boat goes, my head bangs to the top, then the boat goes the other way, my feet bang to the bottom, then my head bangs, then my feet bang with every roll, and I'm laughing hysterically because I'm thinking that I'm looking like some cartoon.
You need to be strapped into that trip.
Exactly. It's just, and the apples are rolling off the table. I try to take a shower. Literally, the water in the shower is at a 90-degree angle. I was, like, laughing hysterically. And then I decide, you know, well, I'm going to do all the adventures that the other people are doing. So, of course, I'm going to go kayaking, and I'm going kayaking. And I'm literally the slowest one. But there's only there was only 16 people on the ship, you know. And it was a bunch of millionaires who were going because they were learning a trillionaire lifestyle. And all this thing about cash flow on ice.
You know, and it's amazing because this is, and this why we're talking about this, because it has a lot to do with myths and mysteries of New Jersey, that Fran is not afraid to do anything. And a lot like Betty Jo Tucker, who also has a book out about, she just started reviewing and meeting people and doing reviews and meeting all these celebrities, and then she put together a book on it. So,
well, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It's like
seizing that opportunity.
It's seizing the opportunity. And the thing with the Myths and Mysteries book was cool because I get to choose what topics I want to write. So there was one topic that was talking about a haunted asylum. And I'm like, going, all right, it's enough with the ghosts. And then on top of that, I got to, you know, go to, you know, crazy ghosts. But then one thing I did find out in my research that I thought was really funny, I'm doing all this research, you know, ghosts and hauntings and devils and all these things. And I'm like, how come nobody ever sees a naked ghost? I go, everybody, every time they see the ghost got clothes on. I go, you know, nobody ever sees
a naked
ghost.
I wouldn't even put that out into the universe.
Yeah, right, exactly, because then all of a sudden people are going to go, you know, I saw that naked ghost. The way that I looked at it was that the ghosts are probably going, it's bad enough they're going to see me, they'll probably scream. Now they see my naked body, that's going to be a double. I'm not sure which thing they're going to be more scared at.
Well, I'm going to guess about why ghosts are fully clothed, is that's because how they spent the majority of their life. If they were to spend it, because people see ghosts of animals and they're in their fur.
Right, well, I mean, what's the alternative to not being in your fur? Then they'd be skinned, so that would be a little gross. But I mean, you know, that's
yes,
not like.
And now, the publisher of this book again is?
Is Globe Pequot Press.
And that's Globe like the universe, Pequot, P-E-Q-U-O-T, like the Native American Indians, I suppose.
Right,
Press.
Exactly. Yes,
okay.
Because that's where they're from. The
and
Pequot
now where do
Indians.
People get this book?
If they go, several places. You know, it's available, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, but if they want an autographed copy, they could go to francapo.com. Actually, the easiest way is they would just email me at francny@aol.com, and I will send them an autographed copy of the book. You know, we obviously they pay, and we we send an autographed copy of the book. Yes.
And if you want to give it as a gift, and you go to francapo.com, that's C-A-P-O, francapo.com, she'll autograph it to someone else. Say if you want
exactly, exactly.
If you want to rush and get it as a great Halloween gift too. Speaking of that, Fran, while we're talking, you could just be thinking on this. If there's a passage that that particularly stands out in this book that appeals to you, you might not have the book real handy. I'll just keep talking till you find it.
I do have the book handy. I don't know if necessarily there's a passage because it would come out of – I mean, I could just read like the beginning of a another story that happens. I could read the beginning of something.
Well, I don't want to give it away, but we'll save this for the book. Don't read about Edison, Thomas Edison.
No.
That freaked me out.
Isn't that amazing? I won't give it away. But when I did that, I was like, wow, wow. The deeper I dug, the more I kept going, oh, my gosh.
Edison was it's going to blow people's minds.
Yeah.
Literally,
exactly. And that's the type of stuff I like is for people, and that's the thing that me and the editor had spoken about, me and the publisher, editor, and the editor, we said, look, there's a lot of common stories, like Johnny Appleseed is a popular story that everybody knows and things like that, and in my New York book, I could have wrote about Sleepy Hollow. We said, outside of the Jersey Devil, because you have to kind of include that because that's part of their folklore and, you know, the sightings and things, we wanted to find stories that had myths and mysteries but that people didn't know about in their hometown.
Well, that was interesting. Now, I just want to check out this map in the book, too, because you have the different areas that a lot of it took place of. And Leeds is south, okay, Leeds Point, that was south,
right.
That was the devil.
That was a devil. Nesco was the Robin Hood of the Pine Barrens.
That's interesting because that's on the water. I'm always interested by the things that are near the water. Then you had
Asbury Park is on the water, and that's
Asbury
with the Morro Castle.
The Morro?
Yes,
yeah. That was. Again, I don't want to give it away.
Right, I know what you're saying.
The Morro is. I would say that could be so many. Haunt movies that I've seen today could be based on that boat and that ship.
Yeah,
And that was another amazing story. Did you find a passage?
Oh, I figured I would just read the beginning of one of the stories here, which, and I'm not going to give away the the thing, but I'll just start at the beginning.
Okay.
At 10 a.m. on Sunday, on sunny Saturday morning.
Okay, slow down, too.
Okay, that's right. Okay, at 10 a.m. on the sunny Saturday morning of September 16th, 1918, an excited young couple, 15-year-old Pearl Bomber and 23-year-old Ray Schneider, decided to go for a little secluded walk and maybe hold hands along the way. Their destination was the abandoned Phillips Farm off to DeRussy Lane, which is close to the border of Middlesex and Somerset counties. What they got instead of a romantic romp was a surprise that wound up shocking the nation. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, it's a good Halloween story. That's how your book would be fun to read on Halloween, actually.
Yeah.
You read passages from it.
And this is the thing I do want to say. A lot of these stories, like the Jersey Devil, okay, yes, is it true, is it not true? There's a lot of sightings.
Well,
you know,
there is a Spanish, what is the name of it? The Chewbacca, I want to say Chewbacca, but it's like, it's a Spanish apparition much like this, that the Spanish people swear they see in the road, they see it, and has had a lot of sightings. Oh, Betty Jo says, wow, great passage, Fran. Oh, you don't know Betty Jo. This book will freak you out. It's scary.
Doesn't it, Nancy, when you read it? Because the
I read it last night. And I go, why didn't I read it in the daylight? Why didn't I read it in the daylight? Because it's an easy read. You take a breath in between each story. Betty Jo, yes. Betty Jo's Frankenstein tomorrow, along with this, is very good. I just got the parallel because Betty Jo's a big fan of the show. Fran, she wrote a book called Confessions of a Movie Addict, but she is out there. She's got a radio show just like you. It's that opportunity and not being afraid. She was doing it before anybody was blogging and as a reviewer, and so it's out there. But the scary stories that revolve around your area, and I believe, Betty Jo, you're in Colorado, so you must have a lot of good stories too. Now, Fran, in this book, there was a connection to America's Most Wanted?
Yes. Now, with the John List chapter. Now, let me tell you something. That's the thing I was going to bring up. The book is called Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey, but it doesn't mean that a lot of these stories aren't true. I mean, a good deal of these stories are absolute true, and that's what's so creepy about it, because these are true people, and the mysteries is that the case hasn't been solved. There's a lot of unsolved murder cases that happened out there. I'm not going to give away, but I will say...
Don't give away, but let's just say that one of the cases she discussed in the book took place in New Jersey, is a true story, is a horrendous story, and it happened to come full circle in that you want to find out what happened to this, but it is a horrendous, it's almost every story in Fran's book could be a movie.
And that's the thing. It's like as I was doing it in my head, I could picture like these things. And, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff, I went and spoke to prosecutors. They were showing me evidence with blood-stained clothes on it.
Oh,
and
no.
They would, yeah, I was going – I mean, I remember there was this one, you know, for one of the stories in the book, there's an unsolved case since 1922. We went in there, and the guy was pulling out, I mean, stacks of things, you know, the preacher's collar and the choir singers. That was one chapter. It's called The Minister and the Choir Singer. And,
oh.
You know, I was looking at the bloodstained clothes. And so kidding around, I said to him, I said, well, this is all just I said, this is all, you know, just like clothes and things like that. You don't have anything like live. And then he goes, look at the bucket next to you. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, there's a heart in there. I'm like, get out of here. And
there was
so
a heart in there?
There was a heart in ice in a bucket next to where we were.
From
for a
what
case
year?
No, from recently, from not too
my.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and the guy spent an hour with me talking about why, you know, and that's the cool thing, because during my research, you know, somebody writes a book, and, you know, but they don't go out in the field, then you only get what other previous books tell you. But I went out in the field and asked the police officers, what do you think happened? What is your theory on what happened? Is there anything that's been discovered since? And they were telling me theories and things that they found out that I couldn't find anywhere if I looked, you know, in books,
would be
online.
Only they would know, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's what made it even more amazing.
It's near Halloween. Just do a passage from Chapter 8, The Walking Dead of Gully Road.
Uh-huh. Oh, and that, there's a funny backstory to that, which I could tell you.
Okay.
Let me get the passage
find
first.
Find the pastor.
Yeah, well, we did.
Betty Jo is from Colorado, yes. And she has that.
Okay, 89. Oh, hold on.
But this would
right.
be good for Halloween.
Okay, let's see. Let me grab a good passage from here.
Again, Fran is not afraid to go in there, as you heard, looking at hearts and whatever. She dives into with such a gusto where other people would be afraid. But after you've jumped out of a plane and scaled mountains and been to the Titanic, everything else is just gravy.
Right, exactly. You know. All right, you see it goes. Can you do better than that? Come on, give me a bit of scream. All right.
Found one?
Supposedly the old man is trying to... Okay, so I guess, should I leap into it or... Okay.
Yeah, leap into it.
Okay. Let's see. There was... Okay. Let me get a little bit better. Okay. The third ghost was equally as disturbing in real life as she was in the afterlife. Mary Rowe, more commonly known as Moll de Grawl, was not a pleasant woman. Alive during the middle 1800s, she was known in town as a witch. No one knows who started the rumor, but she was blamed for everything bad that occurred. If milk went sour, a puppy died, it was Moll's fault. Horses were known to bolt away after midnight, never to return again if they saw her. Dogs would bark viciously. Parents would use the rumor that a witch lived on the block as a way to keep their kids at night. Over the years, her reputation grew. Her acts became more evil, and there was talk that she was practicing devil worship. Soon, however, things took a really bad turn. Healthy babies who had set eyes upon her suddenly started to die without cause. Though people said this curse only affected families, Molly had some sort of grudge against. The townsfolk got fed up and decided to lead a mob, Frankenstein style, to her broken-down shack. With torches burning, they were ready to dispose of the witch, but Moll beat them to the punch. When they broke down the door, there she was, sitting in a chair, dead, with a wide, evil grin on her face.
Whoa. Pretty scary stuff in here. I mean, and let me ask
but
you
I want
now.
To tell you, let me tell you a
did you see
story
any ghosts?
Yeah, now, that's the backstory I want to tell you. So we decided that we're going to go to Gully Road because I got to get a picture of it. Now, obviously, these roads were a long time ago, so you have to find out what the modern-day road is now called. In place of Gully Road, you have to figure out where on a map it would be. So we find the location, and I see this is a very desolate road. To the right is a cemetery. To the left is a old abandoned gas station and a church that gives food to the homeless. So I see a guy outside, and he is walking his dog, and I say, excuse me, do you know if this road is supposedly, you know, Gully Road, it's supposed to be a haunted road? He goes, oh, I didn't know that. He goes, but I got to tell you, I walk out here at night with my dog, and my dog sees things and goes from it, and I don't see anything. And he goes, and one time my friend came and walked the dog, and he saw two children playing, and I said, no, there's no kids on this block. And so I said, well, do you know how to get into the cemetery? And he goes, there's a fence at the bottom of the hill that you can get into, that the gate's open. So I'm trying to go into the cemetery. I take a picture of the look. I try to go into the cemetery, and I'm with myself, my son, my assistant Dale, and my son's friend. And so we go into the tomb. I said, look, into the cemetery. I go, look, let's look for the witch's grave. Get a picture of that. That'll be really cool for the book. We're looking around. It's a really old cemetery. Some parts are newer. And we can't find it. I'm like, you know what? We still have to go over to the devil's bathtub. So let's see if we can see a local police. Maybe it can help us. Now, walking into a police station, you know, and asking for this kind of thing is not exactly, you know, easy. So I'm across the street from where this most haunted road in Jersey is supposed to be. And I walk in, and there's four policemen around the desk, and I go, excuse me, I need to ask you a question, which I know is not going to seem like a normal question. It's a little bizarre. All of a sudden, they all reach for their guns. I go, no, not that kind of bizarre. I go, I said, I don't know if you're aware, but across the street from you is the most haunted road in Jersey. And they go, what are you talking about? I'm like, yeah, this road is supposed to have, you know, not one, but several dead ghosts on it. And I was telling them the story. And so I said, I need to get into the cemetery to find the witch's grave. And they're looking at me. I go, I know that seems odd. And so then I said, no, but I'm the fast talker. You can look me up. So they look me up in their computers. They make me do a sample of my fast talking to prove who I am. And then one of the cops says to me, he goes, all right, listen, I'm into this kind of stuff. He goes, get in the back of my cop car. I'm like, all right, without handcuffs, right? And he goes, yeah, don't worry. So he puts me and Dale in the back of the cop car. My son and his girlfriend, not girlfriend, friend, who's a girl, are in that. In outside, and so we go into the cemetery, and he goes, so we're looking, and there's this big bell that's got like a long rope, like a Hunchback of Notre Dame type rope. So he goes, ring the bell. I go, you serious? He goes, ring the bell. So I'm like jumping on the bell, thinking, you know, like some, you know, weird looking, you know, cemetery keeper is going to come out, and nobody comes, but you hear dung, dung, dong. I'm like, oh, no, this is getting creepier by the minute. So the cop sees
What time of day is this?
This is towards dusk. And so the cop says to me, listen, I know you're here. He goes, if you get locked in the cemetery, take my cell phone number, and I will, you know, he goes, I'll come with the clippers, and I'll get you out. I go, look, I don't really want to get locked in the cemetery. I said, we'll look for the stuff. So now it turned out to be a really cold day. It was 8 degrees. Now we're out there, we're looking. We're out there for 6 hours looking for this Molly Gross, you know, gravestone. And parts of the cemetery are really, like, old and decrepit. And finally I said, all right, listen, we got to go. It's getting dark. We can't find it. In the process, unfortunately, my son loses his cell phone. So I'm like, all right, so we start calling it. We're driving around the cemetery trying to see if we can hear it ring. We can't hear it ring. And so I'm like, you know, Spence, it's getting dark. We got to go. We can't find it in daylight. We're not going to be able to find it at night. So we leave. Now, I had to leave to do something else in Jamaica, the island. So I said, when I get back, Spence, we'll look. We'll leave a letter for the, you know, for the cemetery keeper, you know, if he finds it, blah, blah, blah. Well, my son decides to go back. And he decides to go back with one friend and another girl. They take three walkie-talkies and military style.
Oh, wait. Okay. Wait, ready? Now slow down and say this part.
They take three walkie-talkies and military style. What they decide to do is spread out about 10 to 15 feet from each other. And so that they can each walk a few paces. Do you see anything? No. Walk forward. Do you see anything? No. So they're scanning the cemetery. All of a sudden, they get to the old part of the cemetery, and the walkie-talkies start going on by themselves. So they start, okay, Mike, don't play a trick on me. I'm not. I swear, I'm not touching it. Noelia, don't. I'm not touching it. Spence, now this was midnight. They were in the cemetery at midnight. And so now they're walking. And they go to this one part of the cemetery, and each of them, and now they're not close to each other, start feeling tappings on the back of their shoulder. They're going, cut it out. I'm not doing it. Cut it out. I'm not doing it. And they all start feeling it. All of a sudden, Spencer gets this feeling, this really, like, deep feeling inside of him, and he goes, I need to go back to that other part of the cemetery. And they're going, why? We've already checked it. And he goes, no, I need to go back. So they go back to the other part of the cemetery, and where they had just looked, his cell phone is now sitting on top of a tombstone. So they take it, and he wants to take a picture of where he finds the cell phone. And as his friend is looking through the camera, he says, Spence, look above you. There's this white light circle thing above you. Spence looks up. They snap the picture. The circles move to the right. Spencer, it's on the right now. He looks to the right. Spencer, it's to the left. Now, all of a sudden, all these ghostly orbs start forming. So we have pictures with seven different ghostly orbs in like 10 to 15 different pictures just in the old part of the cemetery.
Ooh.
Don't go to that cemetery at night.
It needed music, Fran. It just had to have that.
I appreciate that. Actually, that is so cool. And it also forced me to slow down. I'm like, oh, this is
fun. I know, because I wanted to hear that. That is so scary. That is so incredible. If you want to get this book, you can go to www.francapo.com, and she will autograph it for you, or autograph it to a friend, or a friend who likes to be scared. And it's a great, you know what I like, Fran? It's an easy read. It's a fun read. You get a sandwich. It's a great lunchtime read, too, because once you start, you want to go, well, what's the next ghost story? Oh, well, I didn't know that about Edison. Oh, my gosh. And it's lightweight, fit in your bag, very good. I like the Robin Hood of Pine Barrens, too. She doesn't always have they're not all scary. She's got one that's like kind of a nice story.
Right, Robin Hood story.
Robin Hood of Pine Barrens. And Pine Barrens, by the way, give us a little taste of Pine Barrens.
Now, the Pine Barrens is huge acreage, and it's got everything in there from supposedly packs of wolves that roam to, at one point, it had groups of men that were, you know, fighting the war that would actually live like the Robin Hoods of their times in the Pine Barrens.
What year was this?
The Pine Barrens, see, I'm not good with the years. Hold on, let me.
The 1800s.
It was 1800s.
Yes, 1800s. Just around.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
And the 1800s, because you know, I mean, the thing is, you know, the modern day. I mean, there's some more modern.
But the Pine Barrens again.
Again, but the Pine Barrens is so filled. I mean, literally, the way that the Pine Barrens is, it is said that if you walk, my son and I did a survival class in there. If you're not with someone you know, you literally could walk maybe just 5 minutes into the Pine Barrens, and there have been people who've died there because they cannot find their way out. And that is the thing about the Pine Barrens. It all looks the same.
Quicksand?
Excuse me?
Is there quicksand?
They have quick mud. They have quick sand. They have wild animals that are there, and it's just, you know, the Blue Hole, which is another chapter I wrote about, which is supposed to be the Devil's Bathtub, is in the Pine Barrens.
People have tested it and disappeared.
Yes, they've been sucked into the abyss of the Blue Hole, never to be seen from again. But actually, I mean, that's the problem, is that these stories are recorded in the police files. I mean, it's not like these are just some kids spreading the story. There is factual evidence to each of these stories.
And these stories, and when Fran goes out, she commits all the way to going on the set and in search of these stories. Some of the stories, in your book you had an interesting fact. One of the places had the most sighting of ghosts. Which one was that?
The most sighting of ghosts.
It was 36 ghosts in September.
Oh, yes. That's the friendliest haunted castle in New Jersey. And there's 36 ghosts. That particular castle has been featured on many different television shows. There's the owner of the castle lives in the castle. Actually, I know him. He let me go around the castle at night, and I was jumping at everything. His dog actually came out before we went into the haunted part of the castle. I started jumping. I mean, I was very jumping. One lady that was with us literally would not go inside because she said that as we were about to go into the burnt-out section of the castle, she saw a ghost of a little boy from one of the orphanages that had been in the castle prior, before the castle burned down.
Yes, it had gone through many incantations from the start of the owner who loved it very much and died, you know, suddenly, to the transformation of people who had been in it.
Right, and in each person. But outside of that one little boy that was supposedly, did not die in a nice way, all the other ghosts in the castle are all very friendly ghosts. It's got and the owners that
are
in it.
That's right. Didn't one of, if I remember the story correctly, make a deal with a ghost?
Yeah. One of them actually said, listen, you could stay here, because the ghost kept opening, like when the windows, it was actually a very, you know, because it was the owner that died, and that's the ghost that most people frequently see. And so what would happen is one of the people living there, and like when it was raining, and if she happened to be out, when she would come home, all the windows were closed. So it was actually a very considerate ghost. And, you know, the ghost, like if there was a little kitten that they had, and if they forgot to close the cage so that the kitten couldn't go out at night, the door would be locked in the morning. And so she said, listen, you could stay here, just don't do anything to scare me,
and she made a deal with them.
Yep.
And that was it. In your book you said, don't scare me, I just don't want to see you.
Right. She didn't want to be seen, although the husband wanted him to do an appearance on their Halloween party, but I guess he was, you know, non-compliant.
Didn't do command performances.
You're right, exactly. He's like, listen, I'm not getting paid. You're lucky enough I'm keeping your house dry. So,
pretty funny. You're lucky I'm keeping your house dry.
Yeah,
yes,
really.
And it's very interesting. Betty Jo says, very scary. Yikes.
Yeah, and to think just to research it, because I had to go into places to get pictures, and, you know, people would go, what are you doing here?
Did you see the ghost, Fran? Did you?
I did not see the ghost, but this is the thing, and I'll be honest with you. I actually say out loud before I go to these places, I make an announcement to the ghosts. I go, listen, if you're here, that's great. I personally do not want to see you. I do not want to see the ghosts. I don't mind if they do some ghostly activity near me. I just don't want to physically see them. And I've been in places where other people, my son has seen the orbs of the ghost, but my son has also been in places where he's witnessed things. This is in other stories I've written for other places. And my ex-husband witnessed things. My present boyfriend has seen ghosts. They'll go with me. I let them see the ghosts, you know, and I'm just like, okay, you've seen it. I don't need to see it.
Betty Jo says, making a deal with ghosts, that's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, if they're nice ghosts, they respect your wishes. And so,
yes,
you know.
I believe you can also say, if you being haunted, I think you can do an incantation or something like, I free you, leave.
Yeah, right,
go.
Exactly. Spray, you know, holy water, whatever it is. You know, maybe it's used for a vampire. Look, I got some garlic. Oh, that doesn't work on me. That works on the vampire. All right, what works with you? You know, let me know. Each of you have your own thing that you don't like. But
and this book is available at www.francapo.com. She will autograph it if you want it personalized. If you just want to run out and get it at the store because you cannot wait from being so scared and need it for Halloween right away, you can go where, Fran? Barnes & Noble? Where
else?
You
can go to Barnes & Noble. You can order it at Amazon. It should be at Borders. The book is out. The book is out.
The book is out.
And I will say this, though.
Wait a minute. I got to do it with sound effects. True Stories of the Unsolved and Unexplained. Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey by Fran Capo.
Nancy, I'm going to borrow that for my website.
Well, we're winding down now. This has been great. And remember, if you've enjoyed this, also listen to Betty Jo Tucker's Movie Attic Headquarters Going Along. With the Frankenstein theme and the scaring us theme this week, Betty Jo Tucker, who's a nice and supportive fan of the show. And Fran, what would you like to add?
I think I would like to add this, is that in life, keep an open mind, because you never know what is true and what is not true till you actually do the research. I will say this, as far as my book right now, it's easier if they email me because
new
website.
All right, give that email again, please.
It's FranCNY@AOL.com.
CNY@AOL.com. I'm putting it up in the chat room.
Right, or if you go to FranCapo.com, just hit contact because right now that book is so new, it's actually not up on the website yet.
At AOL.com. Is Fran, New York City?
Fran, CNY, Fran Capo. So just Fran and then C, the letter C for Capo, NY, at AOL.com. But if you go to FranCapo.com and hit contact, you can get me that way too.
And also you can find out more interesting information on Fran. All the things you do, not just this book. This book is a small part of it, but it's the latest thing you've done, and that's why they should go and get it. It's a great book. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
It's a good scare. It's just in time for Halloween. I think it's been great, Fran. Read about Fran Capo, or as I like to call her, the amazing Fran Capo.
Where's
the world record holder Fran Capo, the fearless Fran Capo, who will go anywhere and do anything as an adventure. And this is just one more of her adventures. Oh, thank you, Betty Jo, who says, Fran, what a terrific show today, Nancy. Which is, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck with your book.
All right, Fran. That's sound effects. That's www.francapo.com. Get the book, True Stories of the Unsolved and Unexplained Myths and Mysteries of New Jersey. By Fran Capo. Fran, any last-minute things we should look out for this Halloween?
This Halloween, I would just say, just go and explore. Hey, you know what? When you go out there, whatever you do, try to do something to scare yourself in a fun way.
Scare yourself this Halloween in a fun way. But you must get the book. Thank you, Betty Jo. You've been a great chat room guest, and she says wonderful guest. She says
thank you,
Fran. And Betty Jo, you two should hook up sometime or just look up Fran. She might make an interesting guest for your show as well. There's nobody like her. And there's my English woman telling me we've got 5 seconds. All right, Fran, you're a wonderful comedian, a corporate speaker. Please go to our website, www.francapo.com. Thank you, Fran. We're winding down with our psycho music, but you've been a delight. The wonderful, the amazing Fran Capo. Get that book today, www.francapo.com. Thank you, everyone. As we go out on psycho. Thank you, Fran.
Thank you.
Make me laugh even when I'm afraid. Thank you so much.
Thank
you. Here we go.
Thank you.